burned. The thing screamed again, that terrible high-pitched, inhuman sound. I thought I'd finished it, but it wasn't quite done yet. I rolled up to my feet, my knife in front of me, dimly aware that one of the twins had run to Harry and was dragging him toward the cave. The many-eyed turned to me now, all of those red eyes mad and rolling. Harry's blood coating its venom-spitting fangs, and its own blood running in angry rivers all over the rock shelf. If I lunged for it, my moccasins would slide in the mess. They might even slide me straight under those sharp, sharp teeth. The creature pounded all its legs on the ground again, and I knew it was going to charge me. I'd gotten turned about while underneath it, and now I was essentially in a corner with the cave wall on one side and the cliff face on the other. There was a little jutting bit of rock shelf about waist-high in front of me that made a kind of momentary shield. But it wasn't enough to stop the many-eyed, nor was there enough of it for me to crawl into and hide. Besides, I'd never hide while it went for the rest of the boys. The many-eyed ran at me, though I don't know how, with its guts spilling everywhere like that. I didn't have much space, but I got a running start and leapt onto the rock shelf. I lost the temporary protection of the shelf and was completely exposed atop it. But I was only there for a moment before leaping again. It was going too fast to stop, and I don't think it quite realized what had happened in any case. I jumped on its back before it realized I was above it and not in front. I mirrored the slashing action I'd used on its belly, this time stabbing hard in the center of its body and sliding all over it and down. Just like I really was on a pirate's sail this time. More of the creature's blood and venom spurted out, shooting upward in fountains. I crashed to the ground behind it, narrowly avoiding the stinger, and scrambling out of the way before it decided to sit on me. The many-eyed thrashed its legs in all directions as it screeched, all of its insides erupting out. I flattened against the cave wall, covering my ears as it shrieked out its final death throes. That noise will bring every many-eyed on the island, I thought in despair. I had to get the boys away from there, back to the tree, and maybe I could lay a false trail with the dead many-eyed's blood back to the pirate camp, so if any of its fellows came looking for it, they would go after the pirates, not us. I felt a little sick at the thought of the pirates paying for my deed, turning into meat for the many-eyed's children. But truly, it would be better that it was the pirates who just stayed on the island to torment us, or to try to nab one of us to discover the secret of our youth. Better the pirates than one of my boys. I thought all this as the many-eyed shook out its last drops of blood, and then stilled. I could send Nod and Fogg back to the tree with the others while I laid the trail to the pirate camp. I could burn the body first, too, and stink up the area, making the many-eyed confused about just who and how many had been here. And then a voice rang across the rock shelf, sharp and clear and angry. "What have you done?" Chapter 5. It was Peter. His words like frost on the air. I'd half forgotten he was on his way, likely delayed on the path by Nip and his injuries. Peter's green, green eyes burned in the moonlight. Most of the other boys stood silently behind him, their faces unsure. Everyone's expression said they were glad the many-eyed was dead, but Peter, quite obviously, was not glad, and so they didn't know how to feel about this. "It attacked Harry," I said, feeling angry and slightly ashamed, and then angrier because I thought I shouldn't have to feel sorry about the many-eyed. I thought it was going to kill him. "It did kill him," Peter said. His tone said this was of no consequence to him whatsoever. I closed my eyes for a moment so I wouldn't scream at him in front of all the other boys. "You should have left and taken the rest of the boys with you while it ate him," Peter continued. "Why? So it could follow us and eat the rest when it realized just how delicious we are? Peter, it was calling the rest of them. They would have swarmed all over this place." Now they are going to swarm all over, Peter said. Because of what you did, they will follow us into the forest and hunt us until we are all dead, and that will be the end of Peter and his boys. He was making me feel more foolish and embarrassed with every word. This was the first time any of us had killed a many-eyed, though we had fought them before and the monster had eaten their fair share of boys over the years. I'd never understood why Peter only let us wound them, or why he would never explain. Why? I shouted, unable to restrain my temper before the boys. I kept hearing Harry's scream fading away, the last breath leaving his body. Why are they allowed to take as many of us as they like, but we're not permitted to do the same for them? They should have been burned out years ago. We should have scorched the plains and chased the rest of them to the sea. We should never have let monsters stay on this island. They've been here as long as I have, Peter hissed. We had a treaty, and you, you fool, you broke it, and now they'll come for all of us. I went very still. What treaty, Peter? Peter's eyes shifted away. How can we have a treaty with monsters, Peter? How can you have a bloody damn treaty that none of us have heard about before when we don't even know how to talk to them? I saw it in his face. He'd said something he hadn't meant to. And it was bad enough that I knew, but worse that it was revealed in front of the others. How had I not known this? How could I have lived on this island for scores of years and not known that Peter could actually speak to the many-eyed? Worse, how could he treat them like they were our equals? They ate us. They didn't fight us fair and face to face like the pirates. They treated us like dumb animals, nothing but blood bags for their survival. They'd eaten more of the boys than I could remember all down the years. And yet, Peter never let me kill one of them. Not one. No matter how many of my boys they took screaming to the plains. The others were murmuring now as some of the brighter ones fitted the jigsaw together. I never said I could talk to them, Peter said in that careless way of his. Sometimes I could ignore it, but just then it made me see red. I stalked toward him, splattered in the many-eyed's burning blood, still gripping the knife that had saved the others and me from being eaten alive. I wondered for the first time why I'd ever followed him through the door in the other place all those years ago. When he'd smiled at me and told me we would have adventures, I thought we'd be friends always. That it would just be Peter and me, like brothers. But now I saw, and it was so strange that after all this time I finally did see, that I wasn't enough for him. Had never been enough. I didn't mean anything to him. And not even I was special if he could keep a secret like this. It made me love him a little less. And the memory of that smile hurt deep down in the place where I kept all my secrets and sorrows. Peter must have seen some of this on my face, or guessed it by my silence. I saw a little flare of panic in his cool eyes, where he thought no one could see. If he wasn't careful, he would lose the boys. The others would follow me, and he knew it. For I was the one who looked after them, looked out for them. Not Peter. His adventures wouldn't matter when it came down to it. The boys wouldn't enjoy starving to death just because Peter didn't want to be troubled about gathering food. Well, he said, as if I were not standing less than an eyelash's length from him covered in blood and fury. It's all done now, and I suppose I'll have to forgive you. After all, you didn't know about the treaty, and I really think I could make an argument to their chief that you were provoked. I must speak with him about his soldiers coming into the forest anyway. I thought... You said you couldn't talk to them, I said through gritted teeth, and I was certain I'd never sounded quite like that before. The boys knew it too, for they went completely still and silent, as if abruptly aware of the presence of a bear or something else large and sharp-toothed and hungry. I felt something coming off Peter, not anger, exactly, but something strong and powerful, something I'd never felt him direct at me before. The power rolled off him, pushed against the haze of red all around me, sparked against it. A few of the boys gasped and backed away. There was a rising scent in the air, that almost burning smell that came before a lightning storm. A little drop of blood rolled from the corner of Peter's mouth, but whether it was wrought by my will or his effort against me, I never knew. All I knew was that something deep and savage inside me howled for more blood, said there could never be enough. "You're allowed this one time," Peter said, and I had a sense that only I could hear him now. "Just this once because you're Jamie and I can see you're upset. But never again. If you try to take them from me, I'll cut off your hand." "Don't ever lie to me," I said. "Don't." I didn't threaten him, for even as that submerged piece of me raged for more of his blood, there was still a part of me that hurt when I remembered just the two of us and how we were happy. Peter sensed the shift, the throttling of my anger, and gave me a crooked smile as he turned away, not worried in the least that I might plunge my knife into his neck. "I'm going to burn the many-eyed," I told his back, "and leave a blood trail to the pirates' camp, away from the forest. At least it might confuse the many-eyed for a time, especially since they think we have a treaty." Peter turned back to me, ignoring my dig, his face transformed. The light of adventure glinted in his eyes. "That sounds marvellous fun. So much better than a silly old raid. I'll laugh myself to death if a big old many-eyed lumbers into the pirate camp and eats that fat pirate captain. He's gotten so fat, he's hardly sport at all. What do you think, boys? Should we lay a trail for the many-eyed to follow?" There followed a series of reluctant murmurs instead of the cheers of delight Peter clearly expected. Most of the new boys, and a fair number of the old, darted their eyes between the corpse of the many-eyed and me. It was obvious they didn't wish a repeat of this encounter, particularly if it meant that they would end up like Harry, burning from the inside with venom and bleeding out white. "It won't work if we all troop through the plains and the beach, leaving a trail behind us," I said. "It's really a job for one or two." "Then we can be the two," Peter said, slinging his arm over my shoulder like nothing had happened between us. I shrugged out of his embrace, nodding my assent because I still didn't trust my voice, not entirely. He wasn't acting any way that he didn't normally act, but it bothered me more than usual. Peter pretended he didn't notice my cut, but I knew he did. "Not Fog. You take the others back to the tree." He waved his hand, dismissing them. They all looked relieved to be going home instead of with us. The fun had gone out of the adventure for most of them when the many-eyed appeared. It made me worry again about taking the new ones to the pirate camp. Just because we didn't go today didn't mean we wouldn't go another day when Peter got it into his head again that it would be fun to have a fight. The pirates, like the many-eyed, weren't interested in mercy for small boys. The only one who looked disappointed was Nip, whose bruises appeared worse than they had the afternoon before. The broken cheekbone had swelled and was pushing up to his eye, making it look even smaller and meaner. "Someone ought to fix that," I thought. "Push the bones back together so they'll heal properly." But the only person who knew how was me, and I didn't much care to. Nip's good eye watched me, and I saw the waiting in it. He would wait for his chance to hurt me and then take it. I didn't care about that as long as he stayed away from Charlie and the others. What Nip might do to me, or rather try to do, was no worry to me. I went into the cave to see if I could salvage some of the burning wood from the bonfire. The boys followed me to collect the sacks of supplies and the weapons they'd left there. Nod jerked his head at the deer carcass they'd spitted. It was scorched on one side and dried out on the other, entirely uneatable. "Waste of good meat," he said sadly. "And I took it down with one shot, too." I agreed, though I wasn't really listening. Harry's body had been dragged off against the wall of the cave. He looked like some rubbish that had been shifted aside so people wouldn't have to look at it. And that was how Peter thought of him, really, now that Harry was gone, and his big stupid face was stupid and empty now. And I wanted to weep, but knew I couldn't as long as the other boys were there. So I put that weeping feeling inside, next to the place where Peter's lie about the many-eyed had burrowed into my heart and curled up there waiting. I carried an armful of dry wood out to where the many-eyed's corpse lay, seeping fluids that steamed in the night air. It was almost impossible that it was still night, that the sun had not yet risen to end that seemingly endless darkness. It was a very long time ago that I'd woken in the night to the sound of Charlie's cry, though a full day hadn't passed. I returned back to collect some of the burning wood to use as torches. Charlie stood in the mouth of the cave, his gaze half on me and half on the other boys shuffling his feet. Before I could ask what was wrong, he burst out, "Can't I go with you?" I could just imagine what Peter might do to Charlie if we brought him along. Tie him up and leave him in front of the pirate captain's tent when I wasn't looking, or accidentally push him over a cliff or some other horror I couldn't imagine. No, it didn't bear thinking about. Besides, it would do Charlie some good to be away from me with the other boys. It would help him find his place, and he needed to find it if he were to stay on the island. "I won't be gone long," I said. "You just stay close to Del. You like Del, don't you?"
"Not as much as I like you," Charlie said, and then he beckoned me closer.
I put one knee down so our eyes were level, and he covered the side of his mouth with his hand as he whispered,
"And I'm afraid of him."
He cut his eyes toward Nip, who leaned against the cave wall with his arms crossed, watching us. There were burn marks round his eyes and that swelled cheek, and I didn't like the way he looked at Charlie, not at all. We'd crossed him, to his way of thinking, and he wanted his own back. He would take it out on Charlie when I wasn't there. Del had crossed him too, I realized, and rethought the idea of having only Del watch out for Charlie while I was gone. I couldn't trust Charlie entirely to the twins, though, for the twins liked to run and fight and play too much. They didn't have it in them to look after a little one.
"I can't take you with me, Charlie," I said. "We'll have to move very fast, and there might be more many-eyed."
I can fight and run fast," he said.
He could do neither, which we both knew very well, but he was trying so hard to be brave I didn't have the heart to crush him. "There's no shame in going back with the others," I said. "They can run and fight too, but this is a job for just two. One, really, for there was no reason for Peter to come along except to pretend he knew what to do when he didn't. I have to get back to it," I said, so that he would know there would be no more discussion. Nagging in the back of my mind was the worry that the many-eyed would track the smell of the dead one before I had a chance to lay the false trail. I hoped, too, that burning the corpse would keep the rest away entirely. They all feared fire, and the scent of smoke should drive them away instead of arousing their curiosity. Though that juvenile had run right at the fire. But that one was stupid or sick. It had to be.
"Okay, Jamie," Charlie said, his voice very small. "I'll mind you. I'll be good."
I smiled at him and rumpled his duckling fuzz hair, and he smiled at me in return. "Stay with Del," I said. "Don't wander off on your own."
"I won't," he said,
and there was the shadow of a sneaking, peeking crocodile on his face. I went to have a word with Del. "Keep Charlie close to you." He was the only one of the boys who were left that I could trust completely to follow his task and not get distracted like a magpie. Del coughed, a cough that started off low and ended with him spitting out a great gob of blood on the cave floor. His cheekbones were sharp enough to slice you open, but his eyes were steady as he said, "I will." "Nip's got it in for Charlie and for you," I said. "I'll be back as quick as I can, but watch yourself until I am." "I'm not afraid of Nip," Del said, his fingers wrapped tight around the pirate's sword. "But come back soon anyway, Jamie." Del went to Charlie, who stood exactly where I'd left him, watching me. Del took Charlie's hand and then called to the other boys to follow as he led them back down the path. Nod and Fogg, who were supposed to be leading the group at Peter's decree, were squabbling over something in the back of the cave.
Charlie glanced back at me as Dell led him away, and I felt a stab of fear. He was so little, so vulnerable, and so much more could happen while I was gone. I was the only one who could really look after him properly.
And we never should have taken him in the first place. That was what ate at me, really. Charlie wasn't one of our boys. He wasn't lost, not in the way that Peter preferred. He had a family. That I couldn't solve. Once you came to the island, you couldn't leave. That was one of Peter's most fixed rules. If you weren't happy, then you could go to the pirates or feed yourself to the many-eyed, or toss yourself into the mermaid lagoon and drown. But you could never go back to the other place. So I went to Nod and Fog, because I would need them to keep Dell and Charlie and the others safe from that look in Nip's eye, the one that said he was only waiting for his chance. The twins hadn't noticed the others departing. They were arguing. I really didn't care to know about what. And while they hadn't gotten to the point of rolling on the ground punching each other, experience told me this was in the offing. Before they could get started, I smacked them both in the back of the head. They looked up at me with innocent eyes.
"We weren't doing anything," Nod said.
"Yes, we were. He took..."
Fog started, but I cut him off.
"Listen to me," I said, and lowered my voice though no one was about. Peter could be outside, lurking, listening. "What do you think of that new boy, Nip?"
"Don't like him," Fog said immediately. "He's a bully," Nod agreed, "and he wants a fight with you, Jamie. We all can tell. Do you want me to put biting bugs in his clothes? I can do that. He'll go mad from the itching."
"Never mind that," I said. "Don't worry about me. It's Dell and Charlie I'm worried about."
"Charlie's never done nothing to him," Nod said. "But Dell got that Nip good. He was roaring around just like a big old bear when Dell threw the fire in his eyes," Fog said.
He jumped to his feet and started on a credible imitation of Nip staggering around with coals in his eyes. This was precisely why I couldn't leave Charlie alone with these two. They went off on their own adventures and forgot everything around them.
"Stop," I said.
Fog quit his antics, and Nod stopped laughing and sat up straight.
"I want you to keep an eye on Nip," I said.
This was better than asking them to watch Charlie, which they were unlikely to do well. They'd forget about him in an instant, but if they thought there was a chance they might get to tease Nip, or harry him, or fight him, they wouldn't forget. "If he tries for Dell or Charlie, you stop him."
"How do you want us to stop him, Jamie?" Nod asked. I knew what he was asking. Did I want them to hurt Nip or kill him? If they killed Nip outside of battle, then Peter would come down on them, might even try to exile them, despite all the time they'd been on the island. I'd never let it come to that, of course. I'd never let them take a punishment meant for me. Besides, if someone was going to kill Nip, then I wanted to do the deed myself. Nip, I felt, had brought something rotten to the island. He was a worm inside the sweet fruit, and when you found a worm, you tossed it to the ground and stomped on it.
"Don't make it forever," I said, "but I don't mind if you bloody him while you're at it."
They grinned at each other, already planning their sport.
"Now get on," I said. "The rest of the boys are already gone."
"We'll catch up to them faster than a mermaid can flip her tail," Fog said.
"Don't let Nip do anything to Charlie," I warned. "Or there's always battle."
The twins never fought me at battle. Never. It had likely contributed to their long life on the island. The same fear blazed up in two identical sets of eyes. I knew they would mind me and keep a sharp watch on Nip. They collected their things and chased out after the others.
The bonfire had burned down to nothing but glowing coals, but a few pieces along the edge of the pit were unburned at one end and burning on the other. They'd served my purpose. The first seeking fingers of dawn were stretching over the plains when I rounded the cave wall. Peter was perched on the little rock shelf, whittling at a piece of wood. The shape of his creation was just forming. A round ball at the top that spread down into a kind of bell shape. It looked like a child's toy. A doll, perhaps. We didn't have any toys on the island, for all that we were a band of boys. Despite his fear of growing up, Peter likewise disdained child's toys, which were from the country of babies. Our toys were knife and sword and stick and rock, the kind of playthings that bit. I stopped and narrowed my eyes in suspicion. Was he planning some trick on Charlie? "What's that?" I asked. Peter tucked it away and resheathed the knife before I could get a good look at it. "Nothing, really," he said, easily, and his too unconcerned manner set the hair on the back of my neck rising. Before I could say anything, he spoke again. "Didn't you want to burn that mess and lay a false trail? Are you going to wait until the whole tribe of Many-Eyed are climbing the cliff in search of it?" Of course he was right, and I did want to return to the others. But he was hiding something. He had that look. The sun was halfway to its zenith before I got the Many-Eyed burning well. It's not as easy as you'd think, burning a dead creature. Flesh and skin want to cook and crisp and char rather than ignite. If you want to get a body burning, you've got to build up the fire around it good and hot, and then keep watching it to make sure it stays aflame. Once that fire is hot enough, though, the body will burn right down to the bones. Peter, naturally, watched me running to and fro while he continued to whittle at his piece of wood. Each time I passed him, I tried to get a good look at it, but he would cover it with his hand or tuck it away so I couldn't. As soon as I realized this game was amusing him, I stopped trying to sneak a peek. Thereafter, both he and I would feign indifference when I passed, though Peter looked sulky when I stopped playing. An enormous column of black smoke rose in the sky. I wondered if the pirates would see it and come investigate. They never strayed too far from the camp, at least as much as we could tell, and certainly never as far as the mountains. But perhaps the smoke would draw them. If it did, all the better. They'd lie in their own scent trail and do half my work for me. "Peter," I said, wiping my forehead with my arm. I'd taken off my red coat and laid it to one side, for the work was hot, and we were exposed on the rock shelf. He didn't respond, seemingly absorbed in the whittling, but I knew Peter. His hands might be busy, but he watched me intently from under his eyelashes. "Peter," I said again, sharply, so he would know I was onto him. "Hmm?" His knife flashed in the sunlight, winking silver. "What if you went ahead of me to the pirate camp and drew some of them out along the trail?" Peter looked up then and frowned. "They never leave their camp because that captain is a cowardly codfish. Anyway, even if I could get them out, I wouldn't want them so close to the forest. They might get ideas about where our tree is."
"Not likely," I said.
"You've said yourself that this is the dumbest lot that's been at that camp in many a year. Besides, we don't want them to come all the way to the cave. I just want them to follow you part way to make a scent trail for the Many-Eyed."
Peter's eyes gleamed as he understood.
"And then their scent trail will meet your blood trail, and when they go back to camp, they'll take some of the blood with them."
I nodded.
"What fun," he said, tucking his knife and his whittling project in the pouch he wore at his belt. Then he scowled at me. "But you might have thought of this before, so I wouldn't be so bored watching you burn this thing." Sometimes I thought I would bite my tongue bloody not saying the things that Peter needed to hear. Needed to hear, but wouldn't hear. So I saved my breath and didn't point out that he might have helped.
"I'll bring them out to the marking rock," Peter said.
He was already off the rock shelf and bounding toward the path that led down the other side of the cliffs, the side the Many-Eyed had climbed up in the first place. The marking rock was a boulder that was taller than me and Peter stacked on top of each other. It was on the path that ran alongside the plains of the Many-Eyed, and it was close enough to the pirate camp that Peter might be able to lure them there.
"How will you get them out of the camp?" I shouted after him. His voice floated up from the path, echoing off the rock, full of mischief.
"Oh, I'll find a way."
And then I was alone, and glad that he was gone. I'd never been glad at Peter's absence before, and something inside me seemed to shift. My legs hurt like fire for a minute, and then it was over, and I distinctly felt that I was taller than I'd been a moment before. Chapter 6. I wondered whether Peter would notice. I wondered whether I should worry about growing up. I hadn't grown for such a long time, and never in such a dramatic way. It was more a creeping sort of growing, usually, the kind you didn't realize had happened until one day you noticed Peter's eyes were below yours and they didn't used to be. Then I realized I hadn't time to worry about getting taller, for Peter could run fast and light when he was on his own, and if I didn't hurry, the trail wouldn't be laid in when he got to the marking rock. I didn't want to leave Harry in the cave, nor the remains of the deer, both of which would attract bears or big cats. Though I was loath to put Harry in the fire with the thing that had killed him, I knew I must. There wasn't time for burying, and burning was better than being picked over by whatever creature sniffed out the rotting meat that used to be a boy. I dragged Harry over to the bonfire of the many-eyed, and heaved him atop the monster's corpse, getting a mouthful of smoke for my trouble. Coughing and pounding my chest, I backed away from the fire and went back for the charred remains of the deer. Harry and the deer and the many-eyed burned. I collected blood in a coconut half-shell that I carried in my pocket for cupping water from streams, so I wouldn't have to touch the blood and possibly be burned. There were pools of it that had splashed around the many-eyed in its death throes. Then I left Bear Cave and the rock shelf behind, following the path Peter had taken. The mark of his foot was barely visible in the dirt track, and sometimes not present at all for several steps, as if he'd taken a huge leap and landed soft as down, floating on the wind. I ran quickly, and though I was not as light as Peter, I could travel nearly as fast. With a troop of boys crossing to the pirate camp, this path would take hours to traverse, but the sun was just past overhead by the time I reached the path that bordered the foothills on one side and the plains of the many-eyed on the other. Several times I marveled that the juvenile many-eyed had made it to Bear Cave in the first place. The trail was narrow in several spots, occasionally bordered on both sides by sheer faces of rock. How the creature had managed to make it through and sniff us out at the cave was a wonder. I balanced the coconut shell in my hand and dropped no blood until I reached the plains. It was important that the other many-eyed not consider the hill path at all, but think that the pirates had killed their young here on the border and dragged it back to the camp. This part of the trail was the most dangerous, for while almost all many-eyed stayed in the central plains, there was always a chance of coming upon a soldier walking near the edge of their territory. They might even be looking for the one that was now dead and burning in the distance. The smoke was barely visible above the foothills from here, but it'd be clearer from other parts of the island. It might make the pirates curious and help Peter in his task. I listened, hearing nothing but the sounds of the wind, the cries of the birds, and the buzzing of the many-eyed, ever-present but distant, as it should be. When they gathered together in any group larger than two, they would naturally make this noise, a steady kind of buzz that seemed incongruous with their fangs. Still, it was useful as it kept us from being overwhelmed by their numbers. The buzzing that preceded them made it easy to avoid a large pack. The distance of the noise forced me to wonder if I'd been overcautious about the juvenile in the first place. Perhaps with so many babies, and they did have so many, I'd snuck close to their camp once to get an idea of their numbers and later wished I hadn't. One missing young was no never mind to them. Still, it didn't pay to take risks with the boys' lives, especially if this business of a treaty was true. I would follow through with the original plan. I splashed some blood along the trail, then deliberately ran to and fro, dragging my heels in the dirt and making a lot of footmarks. I pulled out handfuls of tall yellow plains grass so it'd appear to the pirates or the many-eyed that there was some kind of struggle. It wasn't certain how much the many-eyed would understand of my charade, but they were smarter than they appeared, that I knew. They weren't just dumb animals. Proceeding with caution, I followed the path and kept my ears open for sounds of the many-eyed or the pirates that Peter was to entice out of camp. I splashed more blood here and there and scratched up the ground in different places. The blood was not as skin-burningly potent as it had been coursing fresh from the many-eyed, but it hissed a little when it touched a rock or leaves or dirt, and sometimes a small curl of steam emitted from a tiny droplet. Even though I was listening close, I didn't hear Peter's approach. I crouched just inside the long grass across from the marking rock, waiting for him. The last of the many-eyed's blood was splashed at the foot of it. One moment I was alone, and the next Peter appeared, seemingly out of nothing. He saw the blood around the rock and turned on the spot, looking for me. "Here, Peter," I whispered, parting the grass so he could see my eyes. He dashed in beside me, his face wilder and fiercer and happier than I'd seen it in a long while. "Are they coming?" I asked. "Yes," Peter said, and it seemed he was resisting the urge to clap and scream with joy. "What did you do?"
"Set the camp on fire."
And then he did chortle, delighted with himself and unable to hide it.
"Set the—"
I started, then my voice trailed away. I hadn't noticed the smell of smoke on him, at first, for my nose was full of the reek of burning bodies, but I caught it now.
"You burn their camp down."
Peter caught the disapproving tone.
"What's the matter? You don't think it was a wonderful notion?
It got that fat old captain good and riled, all right. He's waddling after me now, waving his sword and cursing about what he's going to do when he catches me. Which he never will, of course. He looks just like a plump never-bird egg, rolling along."
He laughed again, and my frown deepened, which made Peter's laugh fade away.
"Come now, Jamie, how is burning their camp any worse than stealing from them or killing them?"
"Well, it's not fair play, is it?" I said slowly. I wasn't sure if I could explain my feelings, even to myself.
"Yes, we and the pirates fought and killed each other, but that was man to man, as it were. We faced one another, and we all had a fair shot.
Burning the camp, it was sneaky, somehow sneakier than a little theft. And it was cruel. Peter hadn't just taken their jewels or their swords. He'd taken their home. The pirates would have a much greater motivation to leave the seaside and hunt us across the island if their camp was gone. Peter's actions put us all in danger, much more so, I thought, than anything I might have done to anger the many-eyed. I was about to tell him all this when he clamped his hand over my mouth.
"They're coming," he whispered.
His hand was dirty and his body vibrated with excitement. I didn't hear so well as Peter. A few moments passed before the shouting and cursing of the pirates reached me. The marking rock, so called because Peter or I scraped a mark on it every time we went on a pirate raid, was at a place where the trail to the beach rounded the foot of the mountains, turning east. We heard them long before we saw them. The captain's voice was loudest, booming.
"Get on, you dogs, and find that blasted boy. I'll string him from the yardarm and keep him there until his face turns blue. Catch him! Catch him!"
From the ruckus they made, it seemed like the whole camp was turned out to find Peter. But as they passed our hiding place, I saw there were only five, plus the captain. The first mate was not among them. I hadn't cut off the new mate's hand yet, but the previous first mate, a man they called Red Tom because he had red hair — pirates are very unimaginative — was with them. I'd taken his hand some months before. The stump was wrapped in a striped bandana, though, like it was still fresh,
or like he was ashamed of it. Perhaps he was just ashamed that a boy had done it. The group of pirates continued on, cutlasses drawn, and I felt sure that if they found Peter, there would be no dragging him back to the camp. They'd surround him and cut him to pieces and carry his head back as a trophy. Peter had gone too far this time. The captain panted along behind the others. He wasn't truly as fat as Peter made him out to be, though his belly did seem to get in his way when he fought, and he wasn't very fast. Given this, it was a certainty that Peter could have killed the captain several times over. But he hadn't. Peter could be a cat sometimes, letting a mouse think it was all right to crawl out of the mouse hole, until one day it suddenly wasn't, and the mouse found itself pinned by sharp claws. "How far do you think they'll go?" I whispered, once all the pirates had missed our hiding place. They'd never come so far before. All the way out here to the plains, and they appeared very determined. What if they went through the foothills and tracked our steps back to the bear cave? From there it wouldn't take much to find the trail that went back to our tree. Dozens of boys had walked that trail for dozens of years. It was a clue that even a foolish pirate captain could miss.
"They won't cross the mountains," Peter said. "Can you imagine that captain even climbing up to Bear Cave? His face will turn red and his heart will blow up before he gets halfway there."
"He might send the others on," I said, trying to make him feel the urgency of the situation. The boys would be in danger. But Peter didn't care about the boys. He only cared about his fun. So I would make it fun. At least, Peter's idea of fun. "What if they went into the plains instead?" I said. Peter's eyes glowed.
"Now that would be an adventure. They'd stumble right into the many-eyed's nest."
"And then the many-eyed would never think it was us that killed their child," I said.
"It wasn't us. It was you," Peter said.
Peter enjoyed laying blame, particularly if he hadn't earned any in the process.
"But you're right. The pirates would distract them," he continued. "I'd better be the one to go into the fields, though, since the many-eyed don't know you."
It wasn't like Peter to express interest in the well-being of others. I stared at him.
"I wouldn't want anything to happen to you, Jamie. You were the first, and you're still my favourite."
Then he smiled. And oh, that smile. It was that smile that had stolen me away from the other place. The smile that made me want to do anything for him. I was suddenly sorry I'd grown, even if it was only a little, and wished I could be smaller again, and that it was just Peter and me running and climbing and laughing, back when the island was ours. He clapped me on the back.
"You can help me, though. I'll go ahead here in the grass until I'm in front of them. You creep up behind and kill any that tried to go back to the camp for help. The best thing will be if the other pirates don't even know what happened. They'll think the island ate up their crewmates."
Peter's grin grew wider and fiercer.
"How I'll love to feed that captain to the many-eyed. He's grown so boring."
I could have pointed out that he could slay the captain any time he wanted a new one. That was how we always got new ones. But I didn't. I didn't care how Peter did it, so long as he kept the threat of the pirates away from the boys. He stood, and he was small enough that his head didn't clear the tall yellow grass, though his ginger hair was just visible.
"You go on back to the cave after I lead them into the plains," he said. "I'll meet you there."
I didn't want to wait at the cave for Peter. I wanted to go on, to get back to the tree, to assure myself Charlie and Dell hadn't been caught out by Nip. But Peter wanted me to wait, and I would wait because he'd smiled and made me remember. He was gone the instant after I nodded, so light and free and unbound to earth that the grass barely rustled as he passed. I waited a few moments, then followed. I could be quiet, but not as silent as Peter. A rabbit was startled by my appearance and darted out of the grass toward the path. I was certain Peter had walked by it a moment before and the little creature hadn't even noticed. After a while I stopped and listened. The sun was hot and making me drowsy,
for I hadn't slept in more than a day now. I think I did drift off for a bit, crouched there in the grass with my eyes closed and the sun beating down and the lovely earthy grassy smell all around me. There was a voice then, an accusing voice that sounded like Peter's. "What have you done?" I thought he was angry about the many-eyed again, but that wasn't it. She was there again. Whoever she was, the she who was in my dreams every night. Her eyes were blank and blue, and dark hair curled around her head. Her mouth was open, but there was a smile, too. A smile in the wrong place. A smile that ran under her chin, from ear to ear. There was a wink of silver in the dark, like a darting fish in a stream. And then I was awake, eyes wide. The pirates were shouting curses, and I heard Peter's laughter on the wind. After a moment, I was able to trace the sound. They were headed west, into the fields, and from the ruckus they made it seemed certain they would find the many-eyed. The noise also told me all the pirates were after Peter. That meant I could relax and walk along the path instead of crabbing along in the grass. I stood, brushing the sticky bits of grass seed from my coat. I was inclined to be a little vain about that coat, though it was covered in blood and dirt and who knows what else. I was vain about it because Peter wanted it, and because it still bothered him that I'd thought of getting it first. I drifted along the trail back to the cave, thinking of nothing in particular except perhaps a nap. The thrumming urgency that plagued me earlier was gone. The sun had beaten me into a sense of dreamy lassitude. My only thought was to reach the cave before Peter returned so that I could sleep for a time. Because I was walking slowly and not listening properly, the pirate was practically upon me before I noticed him. The trail wandered this way and that along the bottom rim of the foothills, and there were many blind turns and curves. I should have heard him. He pounded down the dirt in those heavy boots all the pirates wore, and his breath came in sharp puffs as he ran. But I didn't hear him. I was thinking of my dream, and the voice, and the silver knife. I rounded a corner and he was there, only a few strides away from me. And my sudden appearance made him draw up and jump away with a frightened yell. "You," he said, for of course it was Red Tom. Red Tom who hated me. Red Tom who'd lost his hand to me. Red Tom who was no longer first mate because of me. That hazy drifting feeling shook off in an instant. I had my orders from Peter. No one was to go back to the pirate camp. When he'd passed by earlier, Red Tom had his sword out, ready to slice Peter apart. Now it was gone. He must have dropped it in the fields. Red Tom had entered the fields, I knew that much. I saw the clinging strands of long grass on his clothes. His face was white as the cold moon, though he'd been running hard. He made as if to charge me, but my words stopped him dead. "You saw one, didn't you?" He gulped air, his skin more bloodless than before.
"It were horrible. The captain. It bit the captain in two, and his blood were everywhere. Everywhere."
Red Tom closed his eyes, and I was sure he could see that vision of his captain eaten alive on the insides of his eyelids. That was just enough time for me to pull my dagger out and lodge it in his throat. His eyes flew open, and he gurgled, and blood pooled in his mouth and spilled over his lips. His hands scrabbled uselessly in the air as he fell to his knees. And then, Red Tom was no more. His body slumped to the ground. I pulled the knife out, wiping the blood on my deerskin pants. The sun was heading down in the west. I shielded my eyes with my hand as I gazed over the long fields of yellow grass. There was no sign of Peter, the pirates, or the many-eyed. I thought they must have been quite near for Red Tom to be returning so soon to the camp. Then again, I reflected, I had dozed in the grass. Though it had seemed like only a moment, it may have been longer. The noise that woke me could have been from farther away than I thought. Sounds travelled strangely
on the island. Red Tom's corpse attracted flies almost immediately. I grabbed his arm and dragged him into the grass, leaving a trail of sticky blood behind. Sweat poured down my neck and back. It always amazed me how heavy grown-up corpses were compared to boys, even if the grown-up in question was as skinny as Red Tom. I left him just inside the edge of the fields, so that any passing many-eyed would find him and eat him. If any of the other pirates came looking this way for their lost companions, the only evidence they would find would be that trail of blood. With luck, even that would be washed away in the next rain before anyone went searching. Then I started on the trek back to Bear Cave. I entered the path through a narrow cut in two rock faces. The trail wound steeply upward before settling into an ebb and flow across the foothills and linking up with the cliff path to Bear Cave. Once you were partway up the trail, you could look out pretty far over the fields, and I did just that, turning back to see if I could catch a glimpse of Peter before the sun went all the way down. I can't run as fast as Peter, nor can I hear as well, but I can see clear and far, and the only limit to the accuracy of my shooting was how far arrows could fly. To my surprise, Peter wasn't terribly far away at all, perhaps a quarter of an hour's walking. I saw him very clearly, not far inside the borders of the plains. Several blue and pink flowers sprouted nearby, bobbing around his head. He stood there, clearly unconcerned that he might be seen or caught by anyone. His face was in profile and he was talking to his hand? At least, that was what it seemed like he was doing. I squinted my eyes and thought I saw a little golden light bobbing in his cupped palm. A firefly? Why would Peter be talking to a firefly? That was strange, even for Peter. He turned away toward the center of the plains and the many-eyed's nest. I watched him, wondering what he was doing and why he wasn't turning back toward the cave, toward me. That was the first time I saw him fly. He rose out of the grass gently. So gently, his bare feet wriggling in excitement. Soon enough, he was almost level with my height on the trail. If he turned around, he would see me. But he didn't turn around. He soared away, over the golden fields and toward the sea. I felt the burn of envy deep in my chest, scorching hard enough to bring tears to my eyes. When had he learned such a thing? Why hadn't he shared it with us? Why hadn't he shared it with me? The warmth I'd felt when he smiled at me was gone. I didn't know Peter anymore, not the way I used to. We used to share everything. Peter would never leave me out of an adventure. But now he had treaties with the many-eyed, and he knew how to fly. He kept secrets. I didn't need to wait at Bear Cave for a boy like that. Someone who said I was special, but only said it so I wouldn't look too closely at what he was doing. I ran. All fatigue forgotten then. And when I ran, I tried to forget all the times we'd teased the crocodile and splashed with the mermaids and made a fool of the pirate captain. All I could think of, all I could see, was the sight of Peter flying, flying. Flying away without me. Chapter 7. He didn't catch up with me until well past the Bear Cave. The sun was gone, the moon was up again, and the urgency I'd lost earlier while sleeping in the heat of the day had returned in force. I'd been away too long. Anything might have happened to Charlie by now. I'd chosen the less direct trail the boys took earlier because I didn't want Peter tracking me down on my shortcut. That was my special way, mine and Charlie's now, and I didn't want Peter knowing too much about it. I heard Peter approaching, but only because he whistled the tune of a pirate sea shanty. The night was cloudless and the moon so bright, as always, that it was like daylight on the path once you were away from the shadows of the trees.
Jamie, he called to me once I came into his view. Jamie, you should have seen it.
He didn't seem to notice that I'd ignored his dictate to wait at Bear Cave, and that burned inside me too, all mixed up with my jealousy over his flight.
Jamie,
Peter said as he caught up to me and matched his strides to mine easily. This irritated me also, as I was half a head taller than Peter and my legs much longer. Only a short while before I'd lamented growing. Now I was bothered that my height gave me no advantage over the boy who always loved to win.
"Did you feed the pirates to the many-eyed?" I asked, my voice cool. Peter didn't notice at all.
"Did I?"
he said, so full of glee his body hummed with it. He then described what was no doubt a thrilling adventure that involved Peter being daring and brilliant to rid himself of his enemies. I listened with only half an ear, for if you've heard one Peter's daring and brilliant story, you've heard them all. I picked up a smooth rock from the path and tossed it from one hand to the other, then tossed it in the air with my knife hand and caught it in the same one several times. I found another rock that was about the same size and juggled the two for a while until I felt I'd gotten the hang of it, then added a third rock in. Peter stopped talking about how wonderful Peter was and laughed at my trick.
"You could be in a travelling fair, Jamie, flipping torches lit on fire," he said, clapping me on the shoulder.
"When have you ever seen a travelling fair? It's not as if we have them on the island," I asked, curious. "I remember seeing one myself, long and long and long ago, just a washed-out memory of men in brightly coloured silks capering across the square."
"We should," Peter said. "We should have mummers and dancers and magicians to come and entertain us in the evenings. The boys would love that, and we can clap and throw flowers at the performers while they bow."
He was already off in his own mind, imagining how wonderful it would be. But it didn't escape me that he hadn't answered my question. Peter did that when he didn't want you to know something. He'd just pretend he never heard you in the first place, and shouting in his ear wouldn't make him budge.
"We should have taken a magician from the other place instead of Charlie," Peter said. "A magician would have been useful, at least for a while. When he wasn't useful anymore, we could feed him to the crocodiles."
"Why do you hate Charlie so?" I asked, ignoring these musings about a magician. Peter would never bring an adult to the island.
"You picked him. I told you to leave him behind."
Peter stared into the sky, giving the impression he wasn't listening at all, but I knew that he was. We'd been together long and long, Peter and me, and I knew his ways as well as he knew mine. I waited, knowing he would say something sooner or later, for Peter loved to fill in empty space.
"He takes up all your time," Peter finally said, and I saw an uncharacteristic frustration wrinkle his brow. "It's always Charlie this, Charlie that. Charlie's too little. He can't fight. He can't keep up. Where's the fun in that? I brought him here to play, and he's useless."
"I have to look out for him because he's small," I said slowly. "Because he shouldn't be here. We shouldn't have taken him, Peter. He still has a mother." Peter flipped his hand at me. Mothers were of no concern to him. "If he takes up so much of my time, if he annoys you so much, then you should let me bring him home, back to the other place." "He doesn't belong here," I said.
"Nope," Peter said, and his voice was sharp as the blade he carried. "You know the rules. Once you come here, you can never leave. Nobody leaves. Nobody goes home. This is home now."
"But if he..." I began.
"No," Peter said. "Anyway, it doesn't matter, as Nip will have..."
He trailed off, suddenly realizing what he said.
"As Nip will have what?" I asked.
Peter said nothing, only turned away and feigned interest in a blackened emerald butterfly that landed on one of the fat white night-blooming flowers that bordered the path.
anger snapped inside me, mixed with dread. I dropped the stones I'd been playing with and jerked him roughly around to face me.
"What have you done, Peter?"